Welcome to Straight Talk, a lively discussion on tough issues impacting our lives. Every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio. Here's your host, Gene Wells.
Welcome to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. It's your weekly dose of news from the diocese and around the world, plus commentary on tough issues that are impacting our lives. Straight Talk, you've got questions. Hopefully we'll have some answers for you. I'm Gene Wells, and I count among my blessings to be broadcasting from the Mercy Live Up studio on Iowa Catholic Radio. They are a wonderful sponsor of all things Iowa Catholic Radio, and we are very grateful for their support. Now, today's topic, I have to admit, my reason for continuing our topic for over two shows, so Islam and Christianity, is really my own lack of knowledge of Islam and to really gain a reality check on the threat of Islam to our country and even my way of life. The media paints a picture of the hatred of Muslims for America, yet I've met a few and I found them there to be no hatred. Every time I hear, though, of a jihad, it strikes fear in my heart, and I have somehow lumped together all Muslims into that radical extremist category. And maybe they lump all Christians into the radical Christian category. So we're going to hopefully break down some of those myths, some of those fears, and really get a better understanding of what is happening and what isn't happening. My guest today, Father Ambrose Ledoux, who is the parochial vicar at St. Ambrose Cathedral and their refugee director. He grew up in the South Sudan as a Christian, and he experienced the devastation of civil religious wars with their Muslim neighbors in North Sudan. So Father Ambrose was with us last week in part one of this series, and we'll continue that personal experience that he has with folks of that religious denomination. Now, also joining us is Steve Kirby. He is a retired detective from L.A., degree in foreign affairs, and author of five books on Islam, including The Lure of Fantasy Islam, Exposing the Myths and Myth Makers. So I hope to break away from the panicked mindset that can be fueled by media reports and separate facts from myths. If you have a question, though, as you know, this show is live, it is local, and we love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment or something that you don't know if it's a fact or a myth, give us a text, 515-223-1150, and we have folks that are here in studio right now, and we can answer it while our show is live. So I want to put our topic into perspective today. I pulled this information from the Iowa Muslims website, and it provides an overview for us, and it starts with, Islam is not a new religion. It is the same truth that God revealed to all his prophets throughout history. Islam is both a religion and a complete way of life. Muslims follow a religion of peace, mercy, and forgiveness that should not be associated with acts of violence against the innocent. That website goes on to say that there are 1.2 billion Muslims worldwide, with less than 20% of them living in the Arabic-speaking world. Muslims believe in one unique and incomparable God. They believe in the Day of Judgment and individual accountability for actions. Muslims believe in a chain of prophets beginning with Adam and including Noah and Abraham and Ishmael, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Job, Moses, David, Solomon, and Jesus. God's eternal message was reaffirmed and finalized by the prophet Muhammad. You know, there's a lot of similarities to what we believe and what they believe, but then there's a great divergence too. The Quran is the record of the exact words. They believe that it's a record of the exact words revealed by God through the angel Gabriel to the prophet Muhammad. It was memorized by Muhammad and then dictated to his companions. The text of the Quran was cross-checked during the life of the prophet. The 114 chapters have remained unchanged throughout the centuries. There are an estimated 7 million Muslims in America. The Muslim community in America is made up of people from a wide variety of ethnic backgrounds and national origins. There are almost 2,000 mosques, Islamic schools, and Islamic centers in America. Muslims are active in all walks of life, and Islam is one of the fastest growing religions in the country and around the world. So that's a little bit of background on today's topic, but so let's get to some local news before we delve into that. First, the annual Memorial Day Mass, remembering the men and women who died in military service to the United Nations, will be celebrated by Bishop Pates at 10 a.m. That is Monday, May 28th at Glendale Cemetery. Glendale is at 4909 University Avenue in Des Moines. What's nice is that flowers will be provided for all the graves of priests from the Diocese of Des Moines. That is, will be nice. And all are welcome. Now, in case of rain, the Mass will be celebrated at 10:15 at St. Teresa's Church on the corner of University and Merle Hay Road. And the Fourth Degree Honor Guard of the Knights of Columbus will be present. So that's very nice. Also, add to your calendar the ordination to the transitional diaconate of Mark McGeary. That's Friday, June 1st at St. Ambrose Cathedral, 7 p.m., and then a reception following at the Catholic Pastoral Center, which is just across the street. Speaking of the Catholic Pastoral Center, you are also invited to join in the celebration of our renovated facilities. This is on Sunday, June 3rd from 2 to 5 at the building at 601 Grand. It is going to be so much fun. There are going to be children's activities, tours of the newly renovated space, and you can learn more about the thousands of people that we serve through the diocese and through the other organizations that are housed there. We are really blessed to work from an internationally admired building designed by famed architect Ludwig Mies van der Rohe, and the Catholic Pastoral Center is an architectural gem in the heart of the city. So come and see the renovations that we've done to preserve this historic building for the next 50 years. Some international news. On Pentecost Sunday, Pope Francis announced the creation of 14 new cardinals to be installed officially June 29th, which is the Feast of St. Peter and Paul. I think that's pretty cool, in this consistory in Rome. Now, Pope Francis said the new cardinals express the universality of the Church, which continues to proclaim the merciful love of God to all people of the earth. He asked for prayers for the new cardinals so that, confirming their adherence to Christ, the merciful and faithful High Priest, they might help me in my ministry as Bishop of Rome for the good of all the holy, faithful people of God. The new cardinals come from 5 continents and 11 countries, representing especially those areas of the world where the faith is under constant threat or where there have been immense suffering. Turning to the bishops in Chile, you may have heard that all of the bishops in Chile offered their resignation to Pope Francis. All of them, 37 of them. If you don't keep up on the activities of the Chilean church, like me, you may wonder, well, what's going on? Well, the short version is after a sexual abuse summit, 3,300 pages, I think, something like that, Pope Francis reviewed the information, and to say he was not happy with the outcome is an understatement. There's no word if he asked the bishops to resign or if they initiated on their own, but all indications are that Pope Francis asked for their resignations. Now, what I find fascinating about this is that Pope Francis's management style is his willingness to make tough decisions when called for. So to me, this is really a breath of fresh air. You can read more about this in the unfolding story at ncregister.com. So that's National Catholic Register, ncregister.com. When we come back, we'll talk about Islam and Christianity, part 2. We'll talk to author Steve Kirby, our resident expert on Islam, as well as continuing our conversation with Father Ambrose Daniel Ledoux, parochial vicar at St. Ambrose Cathedral, downtown Des Moines, of his personal experiences of Islam and Christianity in the Sudan. All that and more on Straight Talk, right here on Iowa Catholic Radio. Catholic education provides the best opportunities for academics, sports, the arts, and service. Yet many feel it is financially out of reach. Well, don't let that stop you. Catholic Tuition Organization can help you with tuition so Catholic education can be a reality for your children. Go online to ctoiowa.org and click on tuition assistance. The bottom line, It's for the kids and for their future.
If you've had an abortion and you're still hurting or feeling anxious, please know you're not alone. Help is available through a confidential, caring Rachel's Vineyard retreat for post-abortion healing. The weekend retreat runs June 22 to 24 near Carroll, Iowa. It's open to all women, men, and couples who have gone through an abortion. For more information, email Rachel at rachelshelpersofiowa@gmail.com or call 712-943-5550. Start your healing journey today.
Vitae Family Care is part of the Iowa Catholic Radio family. Pro-life physician Greg McKernan, a DO, has practiced for 27 years, seeing patients of all ages with just about every kind of need. Dr. McKernan lives his faith as a physician and is trained in NAPRO technology, allowing him to diagnose and treat many female conditions and even markedly reduce the occurrence of a miscarriage. VitaeFamilyCare.com. Remember, Vitae is Latin for life.
Is it time for a new roof? Then it could be time for you to get to know Bell Construction. Bell Construction is a roofing company entering its 30th year of business. They specialize in residential re-roofs, light commercial jobs, and have the experience to meet all of your roofing needs with personal service. With Bell Construction, the owner will come to your home or place of business in person to inspect and ensure the quality of work that you deserve. They pride themselves in working with you on a personal basis and making sure you are satisfied. Bell Construction, 515-963-4494.
Well, welcome back to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. This is Jean Wells, and I encourage you to text us today at 515-223-1150. We are live, we are local, we are here, and I have great guests that can help answer your questions. Father Ambrose Ledoux, he's the parochial vicar at St. Ambrose Cathedral, refugee director. He grew up in the South Sudan as a Christian and experienced the devastation of the religious wars and the civil wars that happened with their Muslim neighbors in North Sudan. And then Steve Kirby is a retired director from the Los Angeles area. Pardon me?
Detective.
Detective?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, yes, I like Law and Order. retired detective from L.A., degree in foreign affairs, author of 5 books on Islam, including The Lure of Fantasy Islam, Exposing the Myths and Myth Makers. So very excited to have both of you back today. Last week, we really talked about the challenges of converting from Islam to Christianity and you know, and then we touched just a little bit on the civil wars that were happening. But we need to have a better picture. And as I said in opening comments, you know, we kind of know what we hear in the media. And so in this media format, we're going to find out more of the personal side of it and the research side of it and how we can break down some of those myths. So, but first I want our guests to get to know, our listeners to get to know our guests a little bit better. And Father Ambrose, you're in the hot seat first. So tell us about your family. 140 kids, siblings? No, not 140 siblings? Okay.
Let me begin by introducing myself to our listeners. I am Father Ambrose Ladoux Daniel. I came from South Sudan in 2012 to join the ministry in the Diocese of Des Moines. And currently I'm working as associate pastor at the Cathedral of St. Ambrose and also as a refugee coordinator in the same parish. I came from a very humble family from South Sudan. It's a very big extended family, maybe more than 120 people in the family.
Oh, okay.
But that small nuclear family is just a family of 6 people, dad, mom, and 4 kids. I have 2 sisters, myself, and 1 brother. It is a Catholic family, a religious family. My dad was in the seminary, but he could not make it to be a priest. My mom was in the convent. She could not make to be a sister. And my younger sister also joined the convent. She could not make it. I went to the seminary. I made it. Well, this is just what the Lord always tells us. And the teachings of this church also reminds us that in the vocation, many are always called, but few are chosen. Yeah. And also I have some extended members of the family who are priests. The brother of my mom is a priest. And I have three cousin brothers who are also priests. All of them are working at home. My dad passed away in 2010, and may his soul rest in peace.
I bet that was hard for your mom then when you came to the United States, because your dad had only been gone for 2 years, and now one of her sons is going to be leaving.
It is true. It is true. But when I was joining the seminaries, he knows that there will be time when I will not be at home with them. She knows that very well. Though it is not easy on her, on my brothers and sisters, because I left the country in 2000. I went first to South Africa. I was there probably for 12 years. And for 11 years. And from South Africa, I joined the Diocese of Des Moines in 2012.
So when did you first, you know, we always say, when did you discern that you were going to be a priest? I don't know if that's the language you used at home, but did you know from the time you were a young boy that you felt called to be a priest?
I think the call in me started probably when I was 9 years old. When I was nine, that was the time I have that feeling in me of wanting to be a priest. And at the age of, I think, eight, I received my first Holy Communion. And that was also the time I started serving in the church as the altar server. And then at the age of nine, I moved to the parish to live with my uncle, who is a priest. And from there, the rest is history. I joined the minor seminary. I went to the major seminary and ordained April 28, 1996.
Did your family have experience pressure because of their Catholic, strong Catholic faith and that you had gone to seminary, you know, given the conflicts and the disagreements on faith beliefs in Sudan?
I cannot say really the conflict on the issue of disagreement of the faith, because we are all 100% Catholics in my tribe and in my village. There is no any church apart from the Catholic Church. The only difficulties we have in my area is allowing children to go to become priests or girls to become sisters. Because parents will want you to marry and have children. And this is the only difficulties we have there. And then coming to the challenge of the conflict between Islam and Christianity, South Sudan is predominantly a Christian nation. Yeah, we have Muslims and we have good relationships with the Muslims in the South. The only difficulties is the relationship between the South and the Muslims in the North. Especially those Christians who found themselves in the North is always a challenge to go to church, to pray the rosary publicly, even to ring the bells of the church on Sundays. You will never hear it. But on the contrary, you can hear the sound system on the domes of the mosque. And they always pray, use the sound system, but they will never allow the Catholic Church or any church to ring the bells on Sundays.
We're going to get back to that conflict. We want to get to acquainted with Steve Kirby. Again, you know, the retired detective from Los Angeles. You know, I don't know if we're going to... Do we need to, you know, have our hands up and you're going to frisk us or something?
I didn't bring my Miranda rights card,
so
I can't read you those.
Okay, so we're good. So tell us a little bit about your background and your family.
Okay, well, I was born in Missouri. I have a brother and a sister. And when I was about 10 years old, my family moved to Southern California. And I was basically raised in Southern California from 1960 till 2008 when we moved out here to Iowa.
The promised land.
It was. This is the hidden secret, and we've told close friends how great it is, but we don't want to tell a lot of people. But other than I spent those years in California, other than 3 years when I was back in Virginia at school. But I got into police work, started out in 1973 in a beach town, Newport Beach, California. And it was a nice beach town, about 60,000 people, and spent a few years at Newport Beach. Ended up going up to the Los Angeles Police Department, and that's where I spent the bulk of my law enforcement career. And started working patrol, you know, pushing the black and white around, wearing the uniform. And I also went back to school. Before I got into police work, I got my bachelor's degree in German at Cal State Fullerton, a very useful degree. So anyway, I got into police work, and with LA, I went back to school, went to Cal State Long Beach, and got my master's degree in political science. And I really started thinking about teaching and really got interested in international relations. So I resigned from LAPD and went back to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia, and was in the doctorate program back there. And I spent 3 years in Virginia and really enjoyed it. The economics were such, though, that I needed to work, and I really didn't want to teach.
Oh, that money issue.
I know, it became the issue. And I decided I didn't want to teach. You know, I kind of missed the excitement of police work. Anyway, I went back to LAPD, finished my dissertation, so I got my doctorate from the University of Virginia, got into the career path as a detective with LAPD, and started working what was called Bunkle Forgery Division then. And I was working forgery side initially, then went over to the major frauds where we investigated the investment frauds, public corruption cases, sensitive cases like that. So from LAPD then I went to the Riverside County District Attorney's Office as a senior investigator and focused on white-collar crimes and public corruption cases. So for about 31 and a half years in law enforcement, the last half of my career was focusing on major frauds and public corruption cases. We've got a great wife, Judy. We have one daughter, six grandkids, two great-grandkids. I know I don't look that old. But
I know.
Yeah. But anyway, our daughter and four of the six grandkids are here in Iowa. And so we're enjoying it. I have a lovely, lovely wife. We've got a great house. She's done a wonderful job with the house and the yard.
Is she listening? Is that why you're being so nice
to
Judy?
Yeah, I said, hey, be sure and listen. 10 to 11, so, yeah.
How did your career in law enforcement and then your academic studies and foreign affairs, political science, all inform each other and then lead you to the study of Islam?
Actually, they kind of complemented each other. I was always interested in reading and researching, and that's one of the things I enjoyed about being a detective, especially working the major frauds, public corruption cases. You're digging, you're looking for information, and you're also writing a lot. And so I found with my master's degree program, you do a lot of researching and writing. And then, of course, for the doctorate, there's even more researching and writing than in the dissertation. So it was nice because I really wasn't afraid of large cases. I wasn't afraid of a lot of paperwork. I would have reports, investigative reports that might be 180 pages long, but that was the nature of the investigations mm-hmm. I had. So I wasn't afraid of major projects like that. Plus the researching and writing, the academic research and writing helped me in terms of my writing skills for my investigative reports. So it seemed to complement each other.
So how did that lead to really becoming such an expert on Islam and you know that whole religion? How did that all come about?
Yeah, back in California, I was interested in Islam, but I really didn't have time to look into it. Mm-hmm. So we retired 2008, came out here, and built a house, and then we started having a little more time on our hands. In June of 2009, President Obama gave a speech in Cairo, Egypt. It was June 4th, 2009. And I read different online articles about how he didn't really present Islam accurately. And I'm going, you had to look at a lot of different websites to get little bits and pieces. And I thought, it would be nice to have all this information in one place. So what I did, my very first book, I looked at certain aspects of President Obama's speech in Cairo, Egypt, and what he said about Islam, and compared it to what authoritative Islamic scholars had to say to show that really what he was saying wasn't exactly accurate. And that led to my first book. It was Islam and Barack Hussein Obama, a handbook on Islam. And it's heavily footnoted. All of my works are heavily footnoted, so people know, hey, this isn't my opinion. These are the opinions of authoritative Muslim scholars. But that got me hooked then. I'm going, wow, this is an interesting topic.
Well, I don't feel so bad then if the President of the United States didn't understand Islam either.
There's a lot of misinformation coming from non-Muslims and Muslims.
Which is why we wanted to have today's show and continue that conversation, both from the personal perspective from Father Ambrose, as well as the academic perspective. And again, listeners, if you have a question or something that you think is absolutely true about Islam, send us a text and I'll check with our guest today and we'll see if we can come up with an answer for you. We all need to do a better job, but like you said, it takes a lot of time to do all of this research. You know, Wikipedia, which is, you know, come on, what better source do you have than that? Says that it is a monotheistic religion.
Mm-hmm.
True. Teaching that there's only one God, that's what they believe, Allah.
Correct.
And that Muhammad is the messenger of God.
Right.
So far we have three facts that are right. Steve, what are the key elements of Islam that we should all understand? I mean, granted, I don't have very long for this segment, Steve.
Yeah. Well, okay, first you differentiate between Islam and Muslims. Islam is the religion. Muslims are adherents of that religion who come in all shapes and sizes with varying degrees of knowledge about and devotion towards Islam. Just because somebody's
just like Catholics.
Exactly. Just because somebody's a Muslim doesn't mean they know Islam, doesn't mean they understand the religion. And unfortunately, I've seen presentations where just because somebody's a Muslim, the presumption is he knows what he's talking about. So it's important. Islam is based on the Quran and the teachings of Muhammad. And that's why you mentioned in earlier conversation this idea of the 72 virgins. And that's, you'll hear this. I've actually heard Muslims say, well, that's not in the Quran, the 72 virgins as a reward for the jihadists. And they're absolutely right. It's in the teachings of Muhammad, and that's what's left off. The reward of 72 virgins for a jihadist dying, fighting in the cause of Allah, is part of Islamic doctrine. It's not in the Quran. It's in the teachings of Muhammad, which carry equal weight. So that's important to remember.
Okay.
And then the second thing is this doctrine of abrogation, because people say, what about the peaceful verses in the Quran?
What is the doctrine of abrogation?
I'll tell you here. Yeah, people say, what about the peaceful verses in the Quran? Here's the deal. The doctrine of abrogation explains it. The Quran was revealed over a 22-year period. The first 10 years or so, 610 to 622 AD, Muhammad was in Mecca, and he was trying to get the religion off the ground. And the verses that were revealed to him during this time period were a little more accommodating, a we-can-all-get-along type verses, because he at the end of 12 years, he had maybe 200 Muslims, counting men, women, and children. 622, they immigrated to Medina. He established a power base there. And over the next 10 years, 622, and he died in June of 632, over those next 10 years, the nature of the verses that were revealed to him started changing. They became more intolerant, more belligerent, more hostile towards non-Muslims. So the issue is, well, gee, if there's a conflict between a peaceful Meccan verse and a more hostile Medinan verse, well, how does that work out? There was a Medinan verse revealed that said, basically, Allah can change things around if he wants. He'll present something better. That's the doctrine of abrogation. So if there's a conflict between the messages of two verses, a Meccan verse and a Medinan verse, the Medinan verse, the later verse that was later revealed, has the doctrinal authority now. The verses are
like
still
the new and improved.
Well, exactly. Yeah. The verses are still in the Quran because they're considered the words of Allah, but the Medinan verses now carry the doctrinal authority. And that's That's where you find the belligerence, intolerance, and the hostility towards non-Muslims. So it's very important for people to remember. Peaceful verses are still there, but they don't have doctrinal authority anymore.
Well, the in some of the things that I read in preparing for the last two shows, you read that Islam is growing, and I'm thinking, okay, I hear they have very large families like Catholics used to have, but then also through conversion. Now, Father Ambrose, in from your experience of Sudan and visiting and hearing your from your mom, what do you see as the growth of Islam in Sudan? I mean, is it growing exponentially?
Well, before I get to that, let me just add something on what Steve said.
Okay, good.
You see, Islam, Islam, like any other religion on earth, is not a bad religion, neither is it a perfect religion. Yeah. Mm. And secondly, not all Muslims, as Steve says, knows the Quran well or their religion well. Mm-hmm. And there are some Muslims who know how to interpret the Quran properly. And there are also those Muslims who interpret Quran in a wrong way, just like us also Christians. Mm-hmm. There are Christians who interpret the Bible in a wrong way.
Right.
And there are Christians who can interpret the Bible in a correct way. But Islam as a religion is a good religion. Only some of the people who worship in this religion are not good people.
Well, and the challenge is if there's violence in some of the things that Muhammad wrote later on in Medina, and they take that as fact, they are looking to their leaders for what they would consider the truth, yet the Quran, which is more of a peaceful document, right?
No. The Meccan verses of the Quran tend to be more peaceful, but the verses revealed during the Medina time period, 622 to 632, is where you find the hostility. For example, chapter 9 of the Quran is considered the last chapter to be revealed. So essentially, Allah's words in chapter 9 of the Quran are his last words on the particular topics covered there. And that's where you find chapter 9, verse 5, which Muslim scholars refer to as the verse of the sword. And that's where they say, when the sacred months are past, slay the mushrikun wherever you find them. Mm-hmm. Wait an ambush, capture them, this kind of stuff. It's a wide open command. And you can we can talk about the historical background of that verse. But it's a wide-open, timeless command to Muslims to fight non-Muslims. And the only way the non-Muslims can save themselves, instead of fighting to the death, is, as the verse says, until they convert to Islam. If they convert to Islam, then they're safe.
So they don't have to have a disagreement with another religion. It's just by virtue of their existence.
Exactly. Would, and Muhammad. Muhammad, in fact, it was 4 months before he died, said again that he had been commanded to fight everybody until basically they believed in Allah and that he was the messenger of God.
Well, I see we're at time for a quick break. Let's take that break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation on Christianity, Islam, what that means. And really the question that I want to have answered is, should I be afraid? And, you know, and all the things you hear in the media, you just like, oh, you know, this is going to be dangerous for me. Should I be afraid in Des Moines, Iowa? So we're going to get back to that and more right after this message.
Come and adore our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament with the Corpus Christi Procession. The Mass and Procession will be on Sunday, June 3rd, beginning at 11 a.m. at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, located at 15 Indianola Road in Des Moines. There will be a lunch following the procession. And if you can't be there by 11, St. Augustine's Mass procession will be later that day at 3 p.m., located at 545 42nd Street in Des Moines. There will also be a dinner to follow as well. All are welcomed and encouraged to attend.
Support for Dowling Catholic Sports is provided by Two Rivers Glass and Door, providing commercial glass and aluminum storefronts. 515-222-4860. Joe at tworiversglass.com. St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient. Learn more at svdpsm.org or call 515-282-8327. This message brought to you by Homemakers Furniture. Support for Iowa Catholic Radio's broadcast of Dowling Catholic Sports and Activities is provided by Kemin, using science to improve the world.
Kemin is on the leading edge of molecular science, manufacturing more than 500 specialty ingredients used by the feed and food industries and the health, nutrition, and beauty markets.
Kemin's vision is to improve the quality of life by touching half the people of the world every day with their products and services.
Kemin, using science to improve the world. Online at Kemin.com.
Thank you, construction professionals, for your support of Dowling Catholic Sports 365. Construction Professionals is a family-owned business dedicated to our customers. Whether designing, building, or renovating, we are here to better serve you. CPCustomHomes.com.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Well, welcome back to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. This is Jean Walls. And on today's show, we're talking about when Islam and Christianity may collide. But we have lots to cover yet. My guests are Father Ambrose Ledoux, parochial vicar at St. Ambrose Cathedral in downtown Des Moines and refugee director. He grew up in the South Sudan as a Catholic and has experienced that devastation that civil and religious wars can cause in your hometown. And also with me is Dr. Steve Kirby. He is a retired detective from L.A., so don't mess with him. But he has become really our resident expert on Islam. His current book is The Lure of Fantasy Islam, Exposing the Myths and Myth Makers. I want to go back. There was a question I wanted to visit with Father Ambrose about before we went on the break. And he has just recently returned from South Sudan and visiting his family. And he saw many people that were homeless and food was scarce. And I want you to paint a picture, if you would, for our listeners of the impact that the civil and religious unrest have in Sudan, in North Sudan and South Sudan.
South Sudan in general is a difficult place to go in now. It is a country that is really losing all hope in good life, in peaceful life. Everybody is just devastated in the country. And many people are even leaving the country, especially women and children. And the population that have left the country now is almost half a population of the people in the country. And the reason for doing that, risking just to walk on foot 100 of miles, is to save their lives and to save the lives of their children. In South Sudan at the moment, the security situation is below, let me say, zero. Everywhere you just see military people and guns around you. Everywhere in the country, people are just being intimidated by the soldiers. At night, the same people who pretend to keep you safe during the day, they are the very people who come, rob you at night, rape women at night, and do all bad stuff at night. And one thing that is affecting people badly in South Sudan currently is hunger. Hunger is worse than a bullet. Hunger is worse than even a war. And one thing I always tell people, during the time of war, there is no winner. There is no loser. The only thing we have in war, they are victims. And the victims at the moment in South Sudan are children and women.
So, Father Ambrose, when you talk about that, this is this, I'm making an assumption, I could very well be wrong, is the military connected to Islam?
The military, directly at the moment, indirectly? They are not connected to Islam. It is connected to one tribe.
Okay.
The current war in South Sudan is a tribal war. Mm-hmm. One tribe versus all the tribes in the country. And they are the one who have hijacked the government. They took all the logistic, the guns, and all the military equipment of the government. It's just under their care, under their control, and through all this equipment, they terrorize the whole nation.
So their motivation is power.
Motivation is power and wealth. They want to control the government, and they want to control the wealth of the country, especially the oil field.
Well, and given that with our conversation earlier of you are either Islam or we're at war, that's not a good combination to have a tribe that takes over. And if they're not Muslim, they're not Islam, there's going to be a faction that says, no, you know, you have to be this. So now you have two groups fighting for different purposes. And again, the victims are the women and the children.
Yeah, it is true. You see, tribal wars, they are really worse than religious wars. Tribal wars, I repeat, they are worse than religious wars. The reason why I say that, because in a religious war, it is the entire group of a religion facing another religion.
Mm-hmm.
But in a tribal war, you have also small groupings of the clans and the families, like what happens in Rwanda. It is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's worse. At the end of the day, if it is not addressed well, it ended up in a genocide where another tribe will be completely wiped away.
So what's going to happen? I mean, you brought your crystal ball, right? So you're going to know the future, but what is the outlook for Sudan, north and south, given the tribal wars, those civil wars, and the war that's really been, multiple wars that have been happening over the last several decades?
My judgment is that unless the international community put the case of South Sudan in front of them and address it properly and carefully, the worst is going to come out of this war. Yeah, the only thing that will help us is just for the international community to come in. But it is now over 6 years. They are just doing nothing. You ask yourself why, you will come up with no answer. Why they are not helping the situation in South Sudan. They are in Syria, talking about Syria. They are in North Korea, talking about North Korea. But you will never hear any one of them talking about South Sudan.
Well, we are now. Yeah. It's a challenge. You know, unfortunately, I don't think the administration of our own government listens to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. But maybe we should send them a copy of this so they can hear firsthand the challenges. Now, we have a number of Sudanese refugees here in Iowa. It's a growing population. I know we have a lot of them in our schools that fled Sudan, and they are now in our Catholic schools here. How much do you feel that there was religious persecution in this current war, or it's truly just a tribal situation now?
In the current war, there is no religious persecution because the two religions in the country, Islam and Christianity, they are just doing well. They really understand each other. They sometimes also come together if the other one is having big celebration like Ramadan and the other feasts of Muslims. You see Christians, our bishop, they go and share with them. Also, if there are big celebrations in the Catholic Church, like Christmas and Easter, you see the imams coming, attend the Mass, and also give a speech to the Christian community on such big days. In South Sudan at the moment, really, I don't see any challenge between the two religions. The only problem is still between the North and the South.
Yeah,
this is a big challenge that we face in the country.
Well, and
for those who are here in U.S., of course, the biggest population of South Sudanese and Sudanese are here in Des Moines, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Probably we are over 4,000 to 5,000 at the moment in this state. It's a big number. But the only challenge we have at the moment here is really how we can bring our kids up the way we used to bring them at home.
Yeah.
This is a big challenge. And because of the shift from one culture to another, especially those kids who are brought from home here, a good number just ended in prison because of the transition. But we are working hard to make sure that we address whatever challenges is facing this community.
Well, and as Christians and Catholics, we need to really look at those corporal works of mercy. When families come in from another country, whether it's Sudan or Burma or any of the countries, I can't imagine uprooting my kids and taking them to another country where you don't know the language or any of the systems and thinking they're just going to continue to thrive. They're going to be challenged. And we, as residents of Iowa, of Des Moines, of our parishes, we need to have compassion and help in that transition. Allow those parents to have extra support from those of us that are here. We need to move on, and I want to talk briefly, the short answer and the long answer after we come back from the break. But, you know, we hear of travel bans to the countries that have, Islam or Muslims, so no, they can't come in the United States. And whenever there's an act of evil perpetrated by someone who is a Muslim or even looks like they're a Muslim, you know, there's a panic and, you know, more hatred is boiling up. And is this a justified response? And should we be afraid in general of folks that are Muslims? Steve, your response?
I would say in general, we shouldn't be afraid of Muslims because, like I said, so many Muslims don't follow their own religion. My focus is on Islamic doctrine.
Okay.
And Islamic doctrine is what we should be concerned about because of what it says about we Christians, what it says about non-Muslims in general. And I've talked before about the jihadists, you know, blowing themselves up. Virtually like the Islamic State, the ISIS guys, everything they do is supported by Islamic doctrine. That's what we need to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, we do need to be concerned about Islamic doctrine because it supports hostility and violence towards non-Muslims. Not that every Muslim is going to follow it. Not at all. Most Muslims here in the United States, I think, are pretty lax Muslims.
Though some might argue with you, just like some Catholics might argue and say, oh, I'm a really good Catholic.
Oh, no. Yeah. There are a lot of Muslims that pray five times a day, you know, especially go to mosque on Friday. But there's a lot of Muslims who don't know much about their religion, might go to mosque on Friday, boom, punch that time card, and that's all they have to do with Islam. Yeah.
Well, we have to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the myths around this, around Islam, and continue that conversation around extremism and what we can do about it here in our own country. You're listening to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dr. Carla from Here's to Your Health. Please join us this summer for our new Women's Health and High Tea lecture series that will be held at the historical Salisbury House here in Des Moines. Our topic for July will be stress management in a woman's life. We know that stress impacts upon our health and well-being, so please join us to find out how to better manage your stress in your life. The High Tea Luncheon will begin at 11:30 a.m. with a lecture to follow from 12:30 p.m. until 1 p.m. This is a wonderful opportunity to invest in your health. For further information, just go to the Iowa Catholic Radio website at www.iowacatholicradio.com and click on Here's to Your Health with Dr. Carla to find out more information on how to reserve your seat. Seats are limited, so please reserve your seat by June 26th so that you can join us on July 26th at the Salisbury House. In the meantime, here's to your health.
Man, Gary Dolphin, awesome interview. That was fun.
That was great. I didn't know he was Catholic.
I didn't know he was Catholic.
Much less really faithful.
And knows what he's doing. Any parting thoughts on The Greatest Generation?
You know, I was thinking as we were talking to Mr. Dolphin, we really have a responsibility to learn from the example of those who have gone before us.
There's so much to be learned from that generation, especially in today's world.
Do you know what time it is? It's time to Man Up with Joe Stopulis and Father Zach Kotsky, Monday mornings at 9.
R&R Realty is letting others see Jesus Christ at work through uplifting programs like Man Up here on Iowa Catholic Radio.
The Ball Team is a proud sponsor of Dowling Catholic Boys Baseball. The Ball Team is dedicated to exceeding expectations for their clients through integrity, expertise, and value. We create successful partnerships with our customers throughout the entire construction process. Ball Team has extensive experience in commercial, industrial, medical, and hospitality construction. Whether you need a single, a double, or a home run for your construction management services, we can do it all. Ball Team, 515-440-4544. Or online, buildwithball.com.
Welcome back to Straight Talk on Iowa Catholic Radio. This is Jean Wells, and on today's show, we're continuing our conversation on Christianity and Islam, and we're getting into those nitty-gritty parts where we do have extremists that do crazy things, and you know, should we be afraid of the regular run-of-the-mill Muslim that we run into on the street? Evidently not. You know, they're not following those extremists, so that's comforting to know. But then any extreme person that follows an extreme anything, you have to be cautious of. And those folks, it's not like they wear a tag that says, I think crazy things.
But see, here's the problem when you use the word extreme. And a lot of people talk about radical Islam.
Yes.
And I like to say, you know, something extreme means they go above and beyond what their religion requires. And a good example is around Easter time in the Philippines, I think it is. There's a town where the men actually take turns being crucified. And it's to show their piety and you know, their belief. And even the archbishop has said, don't do that. You know, the church doesn't ask you to do it. Jesus wouldn't ask you to do it, this kind of stuff. But they do it anyway. That's extreme. They're going above and beyond. But when we look at what the jihadists do, like I said earlier, what the jihadists do is completely supported by Islamic doctrine. And I mean the verses in the Quran and or the teachings of Muhammad. So I like to say, before you use the word radical or extreme, you have to identify the norm. Normative Islam is based on the commands of Allah found in the Quran and in the teachings of Muhammad. And if what a Muslim does is supported by the Quran and the teachings of Muhammad, that Muslim is not radical, he's devout.
Radical by our world, devout by his.
Yeah, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah. As we look at the Islamic faith and the Muslim people, there are a lot of myths, and that's your most recent book, The Lure of Fantasy, Islam Exposing the Myths and Myth Makers. So, Steve, what are some of the myths that we all buy into but we don't know any better?
The favorite one is we all worship the same God, where you'll have people say Jews, Muslims, and Christians all worship the same God. And when you look at what Allah, the God of Islam, says, you find it in the Quran. Allah says that the only religion acceptable to him is Islam. And Islam is to be made superior over all other religions, even though non-Muslims don't like it. Allah commands Muslims not to be friends with Jews and Christians in particular, and not to be friends with non-Muslims in general. Allah curses Jews and Christians. Allah says Jews and Christians are among the worst of creatures and are going to hell. Allah says that the Jews are among the worst enemies of Muslims. And Allah commands Muslims in chapter 9, verse 29, to fight Jews and Christians until those Jews and Christians pay the jizya, which is really the protection money. And they not only pay it, but they pay it feeling with submission and feeling themselves subdued. So
when we say, oh, it's all the same God, we just have different ways of going about it.
Well, it's a completely different God. And on top of which, and Father Ambrose mentioned the fact that you have the imams come in to celebrate Christmas. It's interesting because Islam teaches that Christianity is a false religion. The Quran says Jesus was not crucified, that somebody was crucified in his place. Islamic doctrine teaches that Jesus was surrounded with his disciples surrounded by a bunch of angry Jews who wanted to kill him. So Jesus asked for a volunteer to take his place, and they went back and forth, and finally a young disciple was accepted to volunteer to take Jesus' place. So the ceiling opened up, Jesus was taken bodily into heaven, and Allah made the young disciple to look like Jesus, and it was that young disciple that was crucified. So for Muslims who know their religion, when they look at a crucifix or a painting of the crucifixion, they see an imposter up there on the cross. Also, Christians believe Jesus is the Son of God. We commit shirk, S-H-I-R-K. That's the one unforgivable sin in Islam, by ascribing partners to Allah, saying he has a son. We Christians, by definition, commit the one unforgivable sin in Islam, which Allah says condemns us to hell. So I always say, how can we believe in a God who hates us, says we're among the worst of creatures, says that our religion is false, and condemns us to hell? The idea that we all worship the same God is really theological nonsense.
When we, and Father Ambrose, I'll turn to you, when we believe that our God is a all-loving and forgiving God, when we are contrite of heart, and, you know, the battle between what we believe, you could see the battle between what we believe and what Muslims believe. And, you know, part of me says, I always am challenged. If I was ever in the situation, would I stand up and fight if it came down to that? Would I offer my life to defend our Christianity? Would I have the courage and the grace, you know, by the grace of God? I pray that I would. But that's what Muslims are taught, to take out the Christians.
Well, Islamic doctrine provides that. Right. Not that every Muslim is going to follow
right,
it,
right.
Fortunately.
Yeah.
Well, even among Christians, we are also taught to defend our faith.
Mm-hmm.
We are taught to defend the church, but not really like the way the other side is doing.
Mm-hmm.
We are not taught to take arms and go and kill in order to defend the church. Yeah, but we are taught just to stand for the truth and to speak the truth. Yeah.
Well, and I, unfortunately, Father, we have to call it quits. I'm getting the high sign from our producer that we are at the top of our show, or the bottom of our show, heading into Christ is the Answer with Father John Ricardo. If you would like to listen to the show again, it'll be rebroadcast this evening at 10 p.m., and it is always available on our website at iowacatholicradio.com. You can get a recording of all of our shows there. I want to thank all of you for listening today, and we ask St. George, the singular saint venerated by both Christians and Muslims, to pray for peace in the Middle East and throughout the world. God bless.